Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Have you ever noticed how in Hollywood movies all the villains are played by Brits?
Maybe we just sound right.
Good morning, video games. Welcome to Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Tommy Dasilo, and with me, as always...
Ben Vanel here, Tommy. Thank you for joining me, rounding out the trio. It's a man who's decided to jet off on a little trip halfway around the bloody world.
I'm live here from these United Kingdoms. My name is Adam Knox. It's a beautiful Scottish day in Edinburgh. I'm looking out the window and I'm seeing blue. That's how you know it's a beautiful day.
Hell
there's
yeah.
There's a blue truck parked outside.
Delivering some chips and curry. Delivering some
Iron Brew energy.
Yeah, which I have a can
of right here.
Fuck, it's good.
They don't sell this shit. You can find like regular Iron Brew in Coles and shit back home from time to time. But the Iron Brew energy... She's elusive, and I've caught one.
I love that. Knox in Scotland and the immediate transfer from the big cans of V to the big cans of Iron Brew.
Yes.
Fresh off the plane. I love it.
It's a real problem, and I don't intend to stop.
It is morning time, though, for you, Knox. That's fair enough. We all have our coffees and things when we usually record. You got to get up and get a bit of spring in your step.
I get a little bit of fucking the end of summer at the moment, which still means rain sometimes, but it's beautiful out here. I'm looking, so we're staying in a building, a flat, built a bunch of flats in a building. I don't know what you call that.
Yep.
I don't think I've ever seen one of those before. Yeah.
And there's like a little garden outside. I saw a fucking rabbit hanging out in it earlier today, yesterday.
That could have been bloody Peter Rabbit, mate.
He lives here. Who knows?
Yeah.
So when I got the plane over, which is one of the most common ways to get here, and I didn't buck the trend. I flew, and
You both grew there and flew there.
Uh huh. So anyone can shout at me, but I love looking around every now and then, and maybe this is like a little bit rude and prying, but I love just having a glance and seeing what other movies people are watching. It's fascinating.
Sure. Oh, I love it.
Yeah. I think everyone does it.
The little, the trip to the toilet, you know, when you're walking down that aisle, you can't help yourself just having a little, having a little sticky beak on the way back.
Especially
seeing
when
a few wild choices.
The guy who was like in front of me and to the right laughed more loudly than I've ever heard someone laugh in public at Mr. Bean's Holiday the whole way through. Just didn't stop enjoying that film for a second of its runtime. And the
beautiful
guy next to me, I swear to God, because I know that there's the possibility that he paused it and came back to it later, but I think I saw repeats of the same scenes. I think he watched The Batman twice.
Wow. Okay. Not bad. Not
on one,
bad.
On one flight.
I mean, I've watched a film and been like, I need to do a rewatch of this at some point because there's a lot in it. Mm. And I like, if I had have watched Everything Everywhere All at Once on a plane, I definitely had that thought about it when I saw it. But if I had have seen it on a plane, especially a long haul flight like that where I've got 13 hours to kill, I could see myself going, you know what? No time like the present.
Wow.
Oh. If I was directing and editing a film, I would wait until the second leg before going through again.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, Everything Everywhere, sure, because there's all those connections and the little dimension things, the references, but the Batman, it's like, it's a straightforward superhero movie. What are you missing?
Right.
Yeah. To be fair as well, I wasn't...
He's not literally a bat. he just dresses up like sort of one that's like a signifier of a bat, but it's more, you know, it's... He's
I didn't really take the man part into it. You know right. what? I gotta start this from the start.
I feel
I
like
go all
a
the
fucking
way back
fool.
Through this,
yeah, yeah.
With this or new knowledge. Yeah.
Watching it the second time and being like, fuck, they kept this remake pretty close to the 1989 version I just watched.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wasn't making eye contact I wonder if with the, him. So he may have just fallen asleep during the first one and been like, oh man, I really wanted to watch the Batman.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's possible.
Yeah,
it's possible. Do you know if the Mr. Bean's Holiday Man was doing the same thing? Just like, okay, what? I mean, I got to try and make sense of this man's behavior. Is he mentally ill or what's going on? I need a second rewatch here.
He was the Mr. Bean's Holiday, big comedy fan, watching a bunch of Wedding Crashes.
Oh, sure.
You know, oh, really? Okay. Because I was going to say, like, this man could have been returning home, but let's assume that he is himself going on a holiday. I love the idea, like, just that, just putting that on to get yourself in the zone of being on a holiday. It's like, ah, well, you know, this is just a good sort of get myself in the mindset that, look, no matter what, things might go wrong on this holiday.
Yeah.
You know, I might get robbed. My accommodation might not look how I wanted it to look on the Airbnb site, but God, it's going to be nothing compared to this caper.
The public transport in England's weird. You got to sit on top of the car. That's going to be really scary for me. But
I like to imagine.
Look boring at least.
I like to imagine this guy's going to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. So he's doing the combo of like. Britain's funniest, you know, like I'm going to see,
right?
I'm going overseas on a holiday to see some real comedy, but he's going to be let down because nothing's going to reach that high bar.
Mr. Bean's Holiday, right. The worst of the Mr. Bean creations, though.
I've never seen it.
Yeah.
I will say.
Yeah,
I'll
me
cop
either.
To that. I've seen the Ultimate Disaster movie. I've seen the series. Saw the animated series. Not very good.
I never saw the animated series.
I think.
What about Mr. Bean's Holiday 2? Where he takes a holiday to the Edinburgh Fringe, and it's just like a month of him just getting fucking torn apart by every comedian there. Like, look at this fucking idiot in the third row. What do you got there, mate? You're Teddy.
He'd like go backstage behind, you know, whatever, whoever the Whistler's mother of comedians is and like accidentally wipe off their set so that halfway up there, and it would be a non-naturalistic thing where they'd be looking at their, actually this is pretty normal for some people, looking at their jokes on their paper halfway through, going like, whatever a smudge says. I can't think of anything.
No, you do alternate reality where it's like Hannah Gadsby doing the net and she's like, and then I got sexually some idiots removed the last bit of this the last bit of this word. And everyone's gone, what, this show sucks, what is this?
I think that Mr. Bean must have come over when Simon Amstel did the comedy festival in Melbourne, because he was looking at his notes the whole way through his show.
Hey, some of the best do it. There's nothing wrong with having a bad memory. I don't remember any times when that's been applicable to me, having a bad memory. But it can happen to people.
We should say, if you are over there in Edinburgh, go check out Knox. Mm. You're on, what, at 11:30 a.m. each day? And then you got a midnight show as well,
11:15 a.m. at City Cafe, and then midnight at a different place called Counting House. Two different shows that are just like lineups with me and two other comedians, Peter Jones and Luca Muller, who I do another podcast, Do Spooky, with. We're doing those ones, and then I'll be doing spots and stuff around, but I can't really tell anyone where any of them are because I don't bloody know half the time. But yeah, 11:15.
City Cafe has got to be the laziest name for a venue I've ever heard.
Do you know what as well? It's like 1950s diner themed.
Oh.
So it's really weird to have like just this default name, like buying a carton that said milk, but inside it's all strawberry. You're like, well, you can't fucking tell me about the strawberry flavor.
It should be called like McGregor's Diner or something.
Yeah. The Rumble Shack. People used to rumble.
The Rumble Shack. It's got to be Scottish as well.
Oh, yeah, true. City Cafe's not that bad. But yeah, 11:15 there is actually a really fun time to be going and seeing shows and walking around. There's lots of stuff to do at the Fringe. So come on by if you are able.
If you're on the continent, get up there.
The,
or down.
The whole process of having to fly over here gave me some time to not have any room in the seat to be able to hold a Switch, literally. So I didn't play any fucking actual video games during that entire flight, which was really annoying when that was the whole plan. But literally, I flew with Etihad, and the seats, like, I've never been more crammed. I've got...
Really?
Oh, and it's not a weight thing. Right. It's because my shoulders would be the same width either way, is my argument. So, yeah, that was fucked. I was folded up like, you know, I guess a piece of paper is a good enough analogy. The first automatic piece of paper, thing you think of to fold.
Deck chair.
Like a... House pack of cards. Cards that a really strong guy has crammed in half.
Yeah.
But I did play some games in the back of the seats if you're interested in hearing about those.
Absolutely. That's what I want to hear. Well, maybe, yeah, I guess we'll be covering the other stuff you consumed through the back of the seat on Nintendo 69 on Monday.
A Patreon podcast, patreon.com/filthycasualspod.
That's right. Every single Monday.
I think it's just Monday everywhere because it goes up later on a Monday.
Yes. Yeah. We talk about pop culture that's not video games. So, we'll be talking about what you watched on the flight over there. We've been doing Better Call Saul recaps every single week. Spoiler reviews, which people have been enjoying and subscribing just to listen to, which is very nice. But for now, what did you play in the back of the seat? I didn't know there was any bloody games in the back of the seat.
It's all dog shit. It's like yes. Uno and the slowest running Uno that you could possibly... Like, Uno, the whole point of Uno is that the game has to be quick enough that you don't think about the fact that what you're doing is essentially random in most ways. You hold on to your draw four card for as long as possible, probably, in case someone else puts one down, even though you're officially not meant to stay. Anyway, that was fucking boring. I played... Yeah.
The house rules like, for that version of Uno is like, take ketamine and make it really slow.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it felt like... But the other three players had taken ketamine and I was just normal.
Right.
Sitting there with a dodgy bread roll and some fucking frozen jam that's just been defrosted in my... So, no, I don't recommend Uno if you're on the back seat of a plane.
Okay.
I can't recommend... The trivia, because the trivia, the trivia game they had there seemed wildly outdated.
What can you remember? Any examples? What are you talking here?
I'm not talking like the 1984 Olympics were the most recent ones. Where were they held or whatever?
Yeah,
but just questions that I mean, maybe I just didn't know the answers, but that seems less likely than the trivia being wrong.
Comedian Louis C.K. is beloved by all, but what's the worst thing he's ever done? Answer, the series Lucky Louie, short-lived sitcom that he put out in 2003 or something.
Will Smith is known for playing Muhammad Ali, but he's never, A, slapped someone in real life, B.
Filthy Casuals has never had a bad episode. Adam's going to Adelaide next week and will be calling in. What do you think is going to happen?
Wow, that is outdated. That must be from 2015.
Exactly. Yeah. Extremely outdated stuff like that. But that was kind of fun. And just like Sudoku and stuff, it was so fucking annoying because the whole thing of the Switch is it being this portable thing that you can take anywhere and whatever. And I was already, I'd been working up the confidence to play Xenoblade Chronicles in front of someone looking over my shoulder and judging my little British anime guys. And I had that ready to go, and then just to not have the wingspan to be able to do it was a real shame. So I haven't played as much of that game as I'd like, but...
You know what would be awesome? I remember seeing an episode of, I forget what his show is called, but Heston Blumenthal's cooking show where he, he would do these like kind of cooking experiments, like making stuff look like other stuff. And he did an episode where it was him trying to do like a gourmet in-flight menu. So making his really good food, but with the limitations of like, obviously you have to have it be able to be like, prepared on a plane and heated up in these like pretty limited conditions. And it was like a really interesting challenge. I would love to see a like marquee game developer go, our next game is releasing exclusively, not on the PC, not on the Switch, not on the phone, on the back of a seat of an Etihad flight. Yeah. That would be like, That would be fucking mad if Naughty Dog just went, this is what we're doing. This is the challenge. Using the worst gaming technology exists, we're going to try and make a flagship title for the Etihad Fly.
That's actually...
That would be fucking
That's the
mad.
Coolest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Because, yeah.
Like, the thing is
and
basically
like a
just
story
like
that's
old...
like 20 hours that like, yeah, you go, hey, this game is going to take you the entire flight to complete.
The
That'd
thing
be
is basically
incredible.
An old shitty iPad at this point too. Like it's...
Right, right.
That's all it really is. So the idea of having to... I know that I would do it. I know that if the game was good enough, I would end up having to fucking buy a plane so I could have access to it forever in case they delisted off the fucking thing.
Yes,
so it would
course.
Probably
that would be...
incentivize me to work really hard and become the richest man in the world.
Yeah.
Okay. That would be an amazing week for the pod.
I'm flying.
This the biggest new release... And so, like, the three of us just being like, all right, I guess we got to I guess we got to fly to Europe this week for the pod to play this new game.
God, look, the new God of War on the back of the seats was really good. The bits with the crying child were a little fucking annoying. The kid who kept falling asleep next... Oh, man, that was so... There was a kid
boy,
next to me on one of the legs.
Stop crying, boy!
Boy! Yeah, there was a kid who kept falling asleep and, like, falling onto me. And there's nothing you can do about it because it's a kid and you can't just chuck him over the other side of the plane like if it were a full-grown man.
Yep.
Oh, well.
Fuck. Yeah.
My life's harder than anyone's.
But, hey, there's been a bit of news in the last 24 hours.
Yep.
That you
While you're in the air, Nox.
We'll have been able to catch up with a game that's coming out when you're back on home soil. So you won't have to worry about that cramped wingspan or anything like that. Pokemon Scarlet and Violet had a little more information sort of leaked out. Well, not leaked out. It was part of a presentation. Half of the presentation was about, I don't know, some card game tournament.
Yep.
And some extra bullshit that they've added to Pokemon Go.
Mm-hmm.
But then, yeah, the main event of this presentation was, showing us a little bit more of... Scarlet and Violet. Mm. Some interesting stuff in there. Not as comprehensive of a look as I would have liked / expected. I thought we might get a little bit more info out of this.
Yeah.
But it's looking all right. It showed off a bit more about kind of the overall world and sort of what the setup is. You're enrolled at a little school in the game. Something I found really interesting is that it's got kind of three big main storylines in it that you can do in any order. And one of those storylines is the kind of classic battling the gym leaders. Mm-hmm. And within that, you can take on those gym leaders in whatever order you want, which I thought was kind of cool. And they didn't say what the other two storylines are. Mm. But I thought that was kind of interesting that, just that very classic Pokemon format is only like one third of this game. I thought that was cool.
Most Pokemon games have had like the second storyline of like the Team Rocket or whatever equivalent through them as well, which I guess will probably be one of those other three, whichever version of that they do. And then, yeah, I don't know. I'd like to see something with a bit more stakes because for whatever reason... The whole hook of you being at this little academy and going out so that you can train up and be at uni, see, it's just like disappointingly dull to me. I don't know what it is about that premise that is just like fucking going to Pokemon lectures paying $8,000 per Pokeball because they know they can sting me for it.
Yeah, and it is, like, really... It's not a million miles removed from what the setup to nearly all of them has been, which is, like, you're young. You are kind of, like, on the back foot. A cool premise would be they bring you in, like, the game starts with you as, like, an established guy. That could be cool. If you started a Pokemon game with a pre-existing roster of Pokemon. Mm. Like, the fact that you're just at school is, like, a formalizing of, like... In all of them, you're sort of doing your education. Like, you meet the professor and you're sort of learning as you go and you're being taught about the world. Like, this is just, formalizing it with an academy. But I agree, Adam. It's not that interesting to me.
It's very much a return to what Pokemon often does in, like, these mainline ones, especially when, like, the slightly different and a little more high-stakes presented way they did it in Arceus... less than like 6 months ago is obviously the thing that I'm straight away comparing it to. So it's not a huge thing, and I think, yeah, them going further and further with this open world format of Pokemon is the right idea. It was really cool in Arceus. It's bizarre for it to be back this quick, but I'm not against any part of what they're trying to do with it.
I mean, this looks a bit more truer open world in that, like, yeah, you can do those story beats in whatever order you want.
Yeah,
and
true.
I believe that you can actually, there's no like gating in between the towns and the wild areas. So you,
right.
I think you can just kind of roam around freely in whatever order that you want, which is really cool. And I'm really into all that. I just wish that they were sticking with a lot more of the radical changes that they made in Arceus. I think the catching wild Pokemon is back to what it's always been in those games. And also, I kind of wish that they were just holding this off as maybe a launch title for whatever the next hardware is, because it would just be nice to see, you know, one of these games looking a little crisper at this point.
I don't know if I can wait till 2025 for whatever the new Nintendo hardware is.
Yeah.
You know, once they finally wring every last yen out of the Switch OLED. I don't know. I like the traditional story structure of the old Pokemons. They're just super, super classic. It's like Harry Potter. It's like Star Wars. You know, it's just like, hey, you're young and you're better at this than everyone else for no reason at all. Fight your way to the top. I think I was getting sick and tired of the simplistic gameplay. It was so, so dumbed down, and it was, you know, it was a kid's version of a JRPG, which, you know, JRPGs mainstream ones have gotten much more fine-tuned and, you know, better, obviously, as time has gone on, where I've always felt that Pokemon was just sort of languishing in the same position. And it was relatively, you know, it wasn't crazily different for Arceus. It just had a different coat of paint. You know, it had the different era and you know, the different groups, the cult, the tribes, the, you know, just a bit of, you know, bit of color. I really do think it's a shame that they took away the real-time aspect for this next Pokemon game. Like, that change up in the gameplay really did make Arceus stand out to me. I would have been fine with a more traditional style of Pokemon game story if they had kept all of that shit, you know, make it a bit bigger, make that world bigger, and let you run around bloody fighting shit in the wild. But yeah, it's a real shame.
That difficulty level thing, I think, was solved in some ways in Arceus because it had so many multiple objectives for you to be kind of thinking about at any one time, that even if you were doing something simple, you were probably doing that simple thing for two reasons and then were immediately going to go off to do another simple thing for another reason. And so, like, that structure of it took away a lot of that awareness of the maybe oversimplicity of how Pokemon plays sometimes, which hopefully that can come back. I'm slightly worried about the fact that because it's go anywhere, choose to do anything in any order, how they're going to balance that out and level that, and hopefully not have like some, I remember like Oblivion and shit would just have every single thing in the world be at some kind of equivalent level to you. So the game just remained kind of the same thing the entire time because everything scaled with you, meaning that it basically didn't change.
Yeah.
Right, it's still linear, but Like, yeah, an Elden Ring kind of thing where you have the option of going and trying to take on the, you know, or it's like Breath of the Wild. You could go and have a crack at getting into that castle in the middle, like, at the very beginning if you wanted, or even, like, you know, once you'd completed the game if you sort of knew what you were doing. But, yeah, you're right, if it's just going to scale anyway, then it doesn't really, it doesn't change any of that.
They've got a couple of smaller, to me, new things in there where, like, they always have some new kind of a different type of evolution gimmick or whatever, which they've got again where your Pokemon turn into these little gems and change their type or whatever, which isn't particularly appealing, especially compared to, like, them getting huge. But then that was only for three turns. But the one from, like, X and Y, I think they were, where they turned into, like, a further, like, Super Saiyan version of the Pokemon was kind of cool. So this one's not that
great.
These
visually look cool, but yeah, I aesthetically like how they look. You know, it's kind of cool, they're little gems, but yeah, it just feels a bit gimmicky and it doesn't really look like it changes the gameplay too much.
And then you get the sort of legendary ones that are on the cover seemingly straight away as like your vehicle pretty much. And it's very funny because both of these guys have like that there's like a type of lizard where their throat looks kind of bulgy out and they've used that thing to make it into tires, which is clever because you're riding this motorbike Pokemon and it turns into a jet. It's for one of them. And then the other one has the big wheels and just fucking runs around on them.
Yeah.
It's so stupid looking. It's the craziest thing. And he's like, the other one's got these big paddles like those bikes that you could hire in the lake years ago. I don't know if they still even do them. But
yeah, they're still there. Yeah, yeah.
You can do that with one of them.
Paddle boat kind of thing.
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Little paddle boat with wheels that sort of churn up the water. The other guy, doggy paddling with these big unnecessary fucking tumors growing out of his chest.
It's so funny. It's like they aesthetically, they kind of basically look the same in terms of their how they're like laid out. Mm. But then, yeah, just one of them is not using the wheels. He's just still using his little hands. It's so weird. Funny.
Because it
but I immediately went, that's the one I'm getting. I'm getting the one where he's not using the wheels.
I think it's literally going to annoy me too much to play all of the game. Because, like, the difference of having one of them be mechanical and like a jet and a motorcycle and a speedboat, and then having the other one be like, but this one's an animal and it's like a jungle cat and it's a swimming bear and whatever. Mm-hmm. Cool. Great. Do it then. Don't just still make it a motorbike. What's wrong with you?
Yeah. It's kind of awesome. I sort of love it. But but yeah, hey, I never know which one to really pick. Like, you know, out of like Sword and Shield and whatever. You know, you look at the box art and the kind of legendary ones. Yeah, it's like, I don't know, they kind of just both look sort of the same to me. I have no real preference one way or the other. But this time, I've got a fucking preference. I got to go for the stupider looking one for sure.
I'm getting that motorbike. I can't do it. I'm sorry. But then you can trade at least. But I do like, that one is a bit silly, but in general, the Pokemon designs of what they've shown of the new ones too, I think are all looking pretty good.
Yeah, they look cool. Yeah. And also you can play, you can do four people running around exploring together at the same time, which is kind of cool.
Do little
I think
raids
that's a
and
neat
stuff too on the League of Pokemon.
I think that's a neat little thing to add in there.
Are you definitely running around all together at the same time or is it just for those raids?
That's the big point of difference of this one of like the four of you can actually go exploring around the whole map together.
That's very cool.
Not just for those battles.
Be really fun. Yeah. I liked, Legends, Arceus, Arceus. I like that particular game. So it's cool to see it having a positive impact on the I guess, regular ones. But fuck me, it's pretty soon to have more similar Pokemon showing up. That's the only other thing.
Yeah, I just, like you said, Ben, if this had all the stuff of like the filling out the Pokedex by like getting a little tick for catching five of them in real time and getting a little tick for, you know, using your
sneaking up or whatever.
Seeing X special move seven times or whatever. If it was like those little things of like the collectible sort of bit of the real time stuff with this in the sort of more present day with the open world map and all that stuff, I'd be chomping at the bit for this. Mm. But yeah, I still don't know how excited I can get for something that is going to feel like a step back from, all these changes that I thought made it. It's still one of my favorite games of the year, Arceus. I loved it. I thought it was such a good jumping off point to make some changes to. And yeah, hopefully there's other stuff in this that it doesn't feel like too much of a step back. But
I agree.
Yeah, I'm finding it hard to get too pumped up for, even though I think there's a lot of interesting stuff.
I guess last tiny thing that we sort of mentioned, but it's worth saying again, is that, it doesn't, it looks like it might be a little choppy and not look that great because it's on the Switch, but nothing you can really, I don't know. That's not a hint there for me. The designs look cool.
It definitely did stick out to me watching that trailer. It was like, this looks like a fucking old game. Like, we're almost at the point where the original Switch feels like watching a GameCube. Not that it literally does, but just like, you know, that perspective on the quality of the visuals.
In terms of like what the hardware is sort of equivalent to, the Xbox 360 came out in 2005, which the GameCube was still getting games put out for it then. So, like, it's pretty that, yeah, I kind of agree, but I just don't know what to do about that other than go, like, I wish Nintendo would fucking grow up. Put out a bloody Xbox, mate.
Yeah. I also think, like, as much as we've commented on, this upcoming, like, mainline game, I think the massive fans of Pokemon who've played every game, from what I remember, a lot of them didn't really get around to Arceus. Like, they were still playing Sword and Shield, and they'll jump in on this excited to see, you know, the new stuff that is in this rather than having seen it in the experimental one, which we all much preferred.
It's funny how much that does get viewed by a lot of people as the spin-off that, like, it is, but it's really doing straight up Pokemon. So, like, I don't know. I just never really quite saw it as a spin-off in the same way.
No,
it felt like
I think we're all on the same page, the three of us. But yeah, I just, from having seen, like, the discussions with, you know, our patrons who are like, you know, we have some real poker heads. That's the position that they're in. And just weird to be.
I have,
not.
I've seen a lot of the diehards on the net being pretty, pretty pumped by this, you know, this trailer and what's revealed. You know, people are.
I've seen.
People are pretty into it.
I've seen a lot of the diehards and the net. In my
okay, was
movie
that
history?
What,
I've
is
seen
that what
most
you saw?
Of the diehards 1 through 4 and
on your on your back of your chair. We'll talk about that on Monday. Okay, don't jump
and
ahead.
Yesterday. also,
I'll tell you what I've been seeing a lot of.
What?
No, go on.
Oh, well,
I've been seeing a lot.
This is a new news thing. The delay, it's fucking annoying how literally being further away, the internet can do a lot of things for you, but if you travel distance, it still takes light time to travel that distance through fiber optic cables, and I'm personally sick of it, and I'm going to be calling whoever's the fucking prime minister here now.
It's because bloody Nintendo's running the light. It's fucking dated. Update it.
Sorry, what were you saying, Tommy?
I was just about to say, I'll tell you what I've been seeing a lot of. When I take my pants off and I look downstairs,
oh, sure.
I've been seeing a lot of hair.
Well,
okay.
I should have gone first then.
You still can.
Yeah, this is just one more little news thing I thought it was interesting to have a look at because Call of Duty, like, stole an artist's work pretty blatantly to... They made, like, some skins.
Is this the dog soldier?
A bunch of different animals as, like, these monster army things, and it's, like, a crocodile, a tiger, a red panda, all that sort of stuff. And a couple of the dogs they've just fucking lifted off of this artist on Twitter called Sailin, S-A-I-L-L-I-N-5. Is their handle, and they've fucking really ripped this person off. It
Activision,
is
Activision, you sons of bitches. Yeah. They're ripping off their employees and they're ripping off strangers.
Yeah. Some like NFT project also did the same thing to this same person.
Fuck.
So every shifty cunt out there at the moment from NFTs to Activision is jumping down this person's Shiba drawings.
Fucking
anyway,
hell.
I just thought that was worth mentioning because we hate plagiarism.
Yeah, that's crazy, though, that the same person's
so
been targeted
weirdly.
By multiple, large-scale plagiarists.
I think it's crazy that this same person's been targeted by multiple large-scale plagiarists. I hate plagiarism.
What do you think about that, Tommy?
I personally think it's crazy that this same person has been... ripped off by multiple large-scale plagiarists. I'm Ben Vanel. I mean, sorry, not that last bit.
See, you slipped up. I knew you would. The other news thing is that Sony is removing something called Accolades from the PS5, which...
Oh, yeah.
What the fuck is that? I literally have never heard of this, and I've been playing PS5 every day ever since it came out.
It's a multiplayer thing is probably why I haven't really interacted with it either, and neither has virtually anyone. It's similar to how, like, do you remember when they first launched, like, the 360 and stuff and were going, like, Xbox Live is the greatest new thing, and, like, you could, like, you had different types of like player zones you could be in, and you would get like a reputation score based on how fun you were to play with and if people gave you like a positive review. It's like a social score, and yeah, it's their version of that system, and just no one's ever fucking used it, so they're yanking it out.
Well, personally, I think it's gone too soon, and rest in peace, Accolades.
Yeah, fail.
I kind of personally think that, yeah, just like gone before its time. So,
yeah,
you know, Vene, Vidi, Vici, whatever that thing is that people say when they don't say rest in peace.
I love Coldplay. I love Coldplay, yeah, man. Yeah. Fucking love Avicii that album.
To them. Anyway, do you reckon Avicii's balls were hairy?
I reckon he kept them trim.
I reckon he kept it very smooth down there.
Really? Yeah. Very smooth.
That'll be my guess.
The fine people at Manscaped.
Yes, Manscaped. Hey, very smooth? More like ultra smooth. That's right. Manscaped are bringing the ultra smooth package to Australia. It's time to stop, drop, and order this premium shaving kit. How do you reckon that read was going? Pretty smooth?
Yeah. I think the
no clip guard on it.
The most jarring part so far has been the sudden stop.
Right, right. Well, you don't ever have to worry about Manscaped Lawnmower 4.0 suddenly stopping, because when the battery's getting low, it starts the little lighter blinking. I think.
Yeah, I think it does something, and then you jam it back in its little cradle that's plugged in, and you forget to take it with you to the UK.
That's such a shame, because it comes in a little travel bag.
Do you know what I brought?
It's a USB charger, so it's very easy to charge anywhere you are.
I brought the little leather bag. It's a lovely leather bag for a travel toiletries bag. I just forgot to jam it in there. But yeah, they make really good, genuinely good products that we use.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Lawnmower 4.0 is like, I guess, you know, the flagship. It's a fantastic electric razor. It's waterproof. It no like nicks and cuts. Like, it's just super safety enabled. They've got other stuff. They got a razor. That's right. They came out with a crop shaver, I think they call it, for if you want to, you know, get real smooth. I guess that's why it's called the Ultra Smooth Package. But everything they have, the nose and ear hair trimmer, we recommend all of them. And I also recommend, this is a little secret just between you, me, and the Lord himself above us.
Dupree.
Yes. You can go to manscaped.com, use the code FILTHY. You can get 20% off and free shipping. So I reckon do that. I reckon give that a crack. That's my personal opinion.
And those motherfuckers aren't kidding when they say they love to cut things off, because they've cut the prices by 20%.
Those motherfuckers.
I don't think those motherfuckers would say cut things off, because that's probably too terminologically close to chopping off your genital. But
right,
they're good at shaving off prices. Anyway.
With precision.
You know what else is precise?
What?
The amount of instruction you continue to get in the Xenoblade series early on.
Oh yes, indeed. Let's kick off with a thought from one of our patrons.
Let's do it.
We've been doing this recently. We're in the week of recording, soliciting thoughts on the big games of the week from people on our Patreon, and we'll read some of them out over the course of our reviews. So just another reason to get on there if you want your opinions about games to be heard by listeners of this podcast. Scott says, I'm about 10 hours into Xenoblade Chronicles 3, and I've been enjoying the story more than Xenoblade Chronicles 2. Oh. It seems to have more weight and a more serious tone that I prefer. The voice acting work, for the most part, is more tolerable as well. The combat is fun too. The MMO-inspired combat with the focus on timing of skills to create optimal rotations is fun and can be very satisfying, although it can get busy and chaotic fast with multiple enemies. Overall, I'm excited to keep digging into it and see what it has to offer. Also, the music is wicked.
Okay.
So, I've been playing the fuck out of this game, and I am loving it.
Are you about 10 hours in as well? As Scott?
I'm about 12 hours in.
Okay.
Yeah, and Yeah, I mean, the tutorials are showing absolutely no sign of slowing down at this point. But, you know, even that, it's like, I like that there's this big thing about it that's like, everyone who's playing it has the, whether they're liking it or not, they've got the same comment. Boy, those tutorials don't stop at any point, do they? I kind of find that endearing, just that that's a, you know, a thing about it that is just a well-known part of the franchise at this point.
It's
that you will just...
Yeah, it's certainly a part of it. I like, there's, it's, the problem is that so many of them you need, and then sometimes they'll bring up a tutorial being like, this is the mini-map, you can look at where things are on the mini-map. It's like, can't you think Xenoblade Chronicles 3 is the first time I've ever sat down and played a video game?
Yes, that's very true. And a lot of them are like, it'll make you go into the menu and do something that it's telling you that you can do.
Right.
So it's like, now we're going to teach you how to equip things. And it's like, okay, yeah, I've played the games before. I understand equipping things. And it's like, now, go into the menu now. Select this character now. And it's like, forces you to do this in the slowest way possible. But then a lot of combat stuff, it's just like, by the way, here's how to do this.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, can we go through that step by step?
It's so weird. There's somewhere, it'll be like, oh, and you can cancel out of attacks and then time them and loop them all together really quickly. And you can make sure that, just cancel them. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? You put canceling quotes and I don't... Yeah,
right.
It doesn't give you an example of that like timing-based thing, but it step-by-step walks you through exactly like the menus and stuff, which it's more of a quirk than anything else. Like, it is a big game with long cutscenes that is demanding of your time, so spending some of that time in the menus isn't like too big of a pump of the brakes compared to the pace of the rest of the game. So it's not like hugely bothersome, but it's just... odd.
Yeah, it was the exact same with number two. Like, I haven't played three yet, but it, I reckon I played about 7 or 8 hours of two, and it was still happening at that point. But yeah, I don't know what it is. I think they are allowed to have it be a quirk, because the series is very popular, I guess.
Mm. Yeah, and I think at this point, anyone who's, you know, in any way familiar with JRPGs has played, you know, even one of them. You're coming to this knowing that it's not a genre that is known for respecting your time.
No.
Like, it, you know, they are generally 100 hours on the shorter side. You know, this one, I believe, is like 150,
it's
roughly.
Like one of those,
so
like,
you're going into it knowing that this is a mammoth undertaking.
Right,
yeah. And also, a genre that is very well known for really taking their time at the beginning before they're, like, really opening up and letting you do the thing that you're going to be doing. So I think kind of, you know, going into it knowing that that's like also just a trope of the genre, you know, in general, kind of helped it to just be like, ah, this is funny. God, these people love taking the absolute mick out of the time that you're spending on their product.
That's an interesting phrase you've used there, Tommy, taking the absolute mick, because this, much like the at least number two, and I think less so in one from memory, I didn't play very much of that, but or very much of two, really, because neither particularly clicked with me. But you've got the same sort of British English voice acting where, like, so if you've got the voice acting
so British,
it's so British. Set to English.
It's not just English. It's not just English accents. It's like British.
Like, they will do these things. So I've got it set to English because in combat you'll get non-subtitled little bits of dialogue that are going on.
Right.
And I felt, even though it sounded like the Japanese voice acting was good, and I think I prefer it tonally, the hearing them just say something that I didn't understand because it was in Japanese was driving me crazy. So I switched it back over. And it is like you are playing an RPG on fucking Love Island. Like, it is the most...
Yeah.
The is Love Island British? I've never seen it. I believe it's British.
I think the original was, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Phew.
Yeah.
That's also what they just call the island of Britain. But
the,
like,
fucking Geordie Shore, right? You're thinking
so
of the Geordie Shore.
It's like...
No, it's not, is it? No, that's true.
It's like, oh, we're having a maniac of a time down here. Oh, it's bloody...
Yes.
We're
it's
really
like East
trying
London,
hard
right?
to... It, like, yeah, it, like,
Because your party has six characters, sometimes seven in it, and during combat, every character is just yelling out all of the time. Like, literally all six to seven of them are just speaking constantly, which is something that happened in 2, which for some reason it annoyed me in 2, and I guess, again, it's like going into this knowing a little bit more of what to expect. Again, it's just one of those quirks that it's like, I love this. I love that they haven't at any point thought, this is annoying and it makes no sense and it's silly. Like, nah.
They've got a very odd, like, heightened, you know, anime drama kind of tone to them that mixed with the type of English that it is really sounds unlike anything that you've ever heard a human say before. It is just a bizarre pattern of speech to hear.
I didn't find the British accents in 2 to be in any way authentic either. Like, they're bad.
No. Yeah.
From my memory, they're bad British accents. And you're right, the cadence and what they're saying is just is utterly bizarre.
Yeah, it's not someone putting on a British accent for the most part. It is like English people speaking in a pattern that is just really unnatural. But I agree that in this one, I think that the characters are just immediately more likable and the story is interesting. Yeah. And so everything that's going on is a bit more like tolerable. But I do still feel like I am tolerating that aspect of it, even though I am getting quite drawn into the story. And I think it is an interesting and big and cool world. And the combat is okay. I'm not sure if I'm enjoying it quite as much.
This is the first time I've ever remembered to change the language in a game before I've started playing it.
That was my problem. Like, the opening something comes about, in I think, like an hour and a half long, so
I generally start up or I just kind of am like, I'll see how the English voice acting is, and then it's, you know, often it's pretty like, you know, I just think I'd prefer to just have the authentic experience of this and just look at it subtitled. But something about just remembering that that was a thing in 2 and then also seeing the trailers for this, I'm like, nah, I'm making sure I go in from the main menu before I've even started a new save and swap out the voice acting. Also, from memory, I think maybe you couldn't do that in 2. I think they patched I think you had to download a Japanese language pack for 2, like a couple of months after the fact.
I think you're right.
Because 2, 2 just never clicked with me. I liked the scope of the world and I kind of liked the lore and stuff that was in there and the big exploration stuff. But the combat, I just could never get my head around. It just never clicked with me. And then a lot of the story stuff was, I was sort of into it up until a point and then it just got a bit too stupid and anime-ish. But this setting and this story, I immediately was so much more into. And I kind of thought at the time that people had really loved 2, and so I sort of expected to bounce off this pretty quickly. But what I've found out from seeing people's responses to 3, who are, you know, fans of the franchise, is that a lot of people who are Xenoblade heads didn't really like 2. They're like this, like that Patreon we read out before said that they're preferring this way. I think a lot of people had a lot of issues with the sort of anime goofiness of 2 that I think maybe wasn't present in 1 and isn't present in this.
Right.
It's got very like anime, we're fusing our souls together and that's going to turn us into robots kind of stuff going on, but not in the kind of silly, just very like anime tropey stuff.
You've
not
got
like sort of
weird little green blob monsters who suddenly show up and everyone's like, hello, Greg. And like that type of anime stuff where like, who the fuck's this guy? Why? Where did he come from? But then the guy's very serious and it's got like a cool premise for like that, where the world and the story kind of starts off from where like you're this group of like child soldiers. You all only live for 10 years and you're
bred in pods to fight in a war and you've got a 10-year lifespan and sort of the ultimate honor is to reach out that 10 years and you get like a homecoming sort of ceremony to sort of celebrate the fact that you devoted your life to the war and that you didn't die on the battlefield. Yep. So that's kind of everyone's main goal is to just live out, get to the final part of their 10 years.
And you're playing as this guy, Noah, who is like a flute guy. He plays a flute to like send people off after they die and whatever. And you, and obviously the story goes out from there, but it just like straight away, the sort of cast of characters you have, I don't know what it was about it, but I immediately was like, oh, I'm more interested in what these people are doing and who they are than, even though they're still pretty, at least, you know, early on, pretty straightforward kind of anime style story characters where it's like, this one's like a bit feisty and this one's a bit quiet and whatever.
Yeah.
But there was something about it that is just clicking harder, like for you, Tommy. I don't know what it is, but...
It's got a bit of that sort of Persona, Fire Emblem kind of thing that I loved of just like, yeah, they're very tropey characters, but group of kids, they set off on this big mission. You've got your little party and they're all kind of... Yeah, they're setting off to work out this big mystery and take on this big evil. But then they're stopping along the way, setting up camp, and they're just like quipping with each other and just razzing each other. You know, that same thing of Persona. They're fighting this big evil, but they're still, they're school kids. Like they're teasing each other. They're getting into their little arguments and they are very archetypal. But yeah, there's just something about this as a premise of just this like this little gang of you that's set off on this big journey. It's like very kind of, yeah, classic JRPG setup that just as a starting point, I was so much more into this than where 2 kind of had this very long drawn out where you're in the village before it kind of set you off on the world. Like this immediately, you're just off on the journey, which
it's
was so much more captivating.
A lot quicker to get going. And you've got those like huge looking, Xenoblade-y environments, you know, with the big sweeping landscapes and all of that stuff that is really cool to run around in. The combat is like, that comparison to an MMO thing is pretty accurate where it's mostly about positioning and timing. So you kind of do, you have all your, most of your abilities will either work better when, you know, you're in a certain place compared to an enemy, like behind them or whatever, or designed to be stacked with either more of your abilities or with a teammate's ability. So you're either waiting for them to do something so you can do this or vice versa. And that sort of stuff is enough to keep you paying attention to the dials that are refilling on the screen and all of that. But it's like, it doesn't feel as much about making choices as about like keeping plates spinning. If that makes sense.
Yeah. That is exactly what 2 was like from memory. It was like, well, you just hold down X or whatever and you hit a fireball attack, you know, move with the bumper, like it, which is, you know, a lot of games are like that and they're still good, but I remember it being a bit too simplistic to like not see through it when I played 2. I don't know how much, you know, it's improved since 2, though.
It feels pretty similar from what I remember. You're, like, auto-attacking, and your party members are still, like, AI-controlled rather than you kind of doing much.
That changes so you can... For a lot of it, you do get to a point where you can switch between all of them, and you end up with, 6 people in your little group, and then you'll have like a 7th slot where you meet people along the story and they join you for a little bit.
Right.
And what unlocks at one point, which is really interesting and adds a lot of depth to it, is the ability to change classes for each character and then rank up those classes, and then you can keep an ability from each class that you've mastered.
Oh.
And change over to another class. So you can kind of customize. Mm. So for each of the 6 people in your team, you'll get to a point where, you've got the S rank in all of these classes and you can really go through and customize what attacks that you have in your little wheel, what class they are, and then what abilities from another class they've kind of kept on. So, it does, I think around the 6 or 7 hour mark or so, it sort of opens all that up to you, and it kind of opens it all up at once and sort of shows you it also. There's something about I don't know why it didn't click with me in the last one, and it is with this, but I am really enjoying the almost like rhythm game nature of like, yeah, moving around where I am in relation to an enemy, and then the timing of, like, because you're automatically attacking, but then if you hit one of your special abilities at just the right time, it does more damage. So just the thing of having to, yeah, keep your charging up abilities in balance and everything like that, and the very sort of, like, yeah, it does hit parts where it almost feels kind of rhythm gamey, and just the amount of depth in customizing the classes and ranking them up is something that I haven't delved too much into yet, but there's definitely, and again, I'm not really swapping between people in battle. I'm just kind of sticking with my one guy, but I have come up against a couple of enemies that have taken me out where I've sort of realized, like, oh, it probably would have been more beneficial to be swapping around and getting a bit au fait with these different classes and what they're actually doing on the battlefield.
That makes a lot of sense. And I'm looking forward to it. Of course, yeah, being that there's been so much tutorial already, of course there will be more stuff coming in. Like, it doesn't even let you open the menus when you first start playing it before it has shown you how to open the menu. So, like, I'm interested to see that stuff all get folded in like a big guy on a plane or a piece of paper as we step. But, like, to the story and the world and the characters are good enough that I want to do that with this one, whereas 2 took its fucking time doing the same thing and showing you similar kind of mechanics and slowly tutorializing you into this more and more complicated thing. And I couldn't be fucked because I wasn't interested in what was going to happen with these characters I was getting more control over.
Another
and that's
big
different this time.
Thing that I think they've kind of made a little more respectful of the time is a big part of these games is finding the items scattered around the environment that you use for, you know, all sorts of stuff. And in 2, you had to, like, walk over to them and, like, push a button, and you would get, like, a thing of, like, here's what you found. And in this, they're just scattered,
like,
on the ground. You
gems.
Walk into them and then you've got them. So which again was another thing I remember just finding so tedious in number 2. I was like, I'm never going to fucking bother getting these items, because it's just like I'm having to look at a little menu prompt, like, every time I'm picking up these things, and there's, like, hundreds of them dotted around the environment.
I'm interested to keep playing more of it. I wish I'd have had fucking 30 more hours to have played it on the plane if I could have spent years preparing for that. But I think we'll probably end up playing a fair bit more of this over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I feel like I'm going to end up doing a lot of it. It's it's great. I was almost not going to go in on this, or I kind of thought I would try it and bounce off it after a couple of hours, just based on my experience with 2 and sort of thinking that that was really indicative of what the franchise is. But yeah, it's really surprising. And I think it looks great. It's, great for a Switch game, but still, like, they've got it locked at a pretty reliable 30 frames, and I haven't seen it. Like, there's often battles where you've got your 6 or 7 party members, and then there's also, like, 5 different things that you're fighting. Like, some of you are morphing into robots. Everyone's doing different attacks. There's all this different stuff going on, and it hasn't had any stutter or slowdown or anything in the time I've been playing it, so I think they've done a pretty good job of keeping it pretty optimized.
The art style lends itself to, like, the sort of technical limitations as well. And I guess the one other thing I would say is that it's like it's Xenoblade Chronicles 3, but I don't think I have played anywhere near enough of the other ones to have come into this one being able to say, like, oh yeah, I played the other one. So it's you can play this one without having touched any of the others.
Yeah, it's Final Fantasy, it's Dragon Quest, it's...
Like, I'm sure there's stuff you're missing or whatever, but those references, even if you don't realize they're references in this one, still work the other way around when you go back to the others, if you feel like doing that after this. So, yeah, you'll be fine.
Yeah. Definitely give yourself the experience of playing with the Japanese language on, and still getting the text translated as if it is the British voiceover. nothing quite like someone like in the typical like anime Japanese girl voiceover audio, and then the text saying you're a right muppet. It's like I don't think that's a very faithful translation of what this person just said.
Well, I'll tell you something. It sounds stupid when you got the British voices on as well.
Well, another game that featured a bunch of school kids going on an adventure together, doing quips while a mysterious force is actually, you know, conspiring to bring about darkness. Frickin' Digimon Survive came out a couple of days ago. It came out Friday, I think. This is out on, I think, everything. There's not, like, you know, next-gen versions, but it's out on Switch and PlayStation and Xbox and PC. I'm playing on PC, and I don't know why this tickled my fancy. I did like Digimon as a cartoon series when, you know, we were kids. It always felt like it was, like, a bit of a also-ran to Pokemon, but...
It was, maybe like the sort of slightly more, if I can misuse a term, badass version of Pokemon.
You've used that term perfectly, my friend. It was. It was slightly more adult, slightly more complex in its like plot lines and stuff from memory. There's a lot of dimension hopping and shit like that. But and I think that is sort of, yeah, similar in this game. The game is, yeah, not related, from what I can tell, to like the series or any other... you know, previous Digimon material. It's just set in the same world. And yeah, the setup is like, you're a kid in a high school class. You've got like the quiet goody two shoes girl. You've got the energetic guy friend. You've got the pretty girl. You've got the badass guy. And you're off going on a little excursion. And this is all being presented from the very start as a visual novel. And it is a really good looking visual novel. It's not like stylized in the way of like a Ghibli or a, you know, even like a, you know, a Satoshi Kon or a you know, like it's very traditional anime, sort of like Your Name or like just like mainstream anime. But it is presented really well. It's really slick. I love the character designs and the backgrounds are like, you know, really detailed and, just really nice. And yeah, you're just like, cursoring across and selecting each character and doing some dialogue and from what I've experienced so far, it's sort of Persona-y in that you are building up, you know, like personal links, character links and stuff. Yeah, it is unfolding this little story of you guys going off into the woods and there being like a weird shrine nearby and the shrine is dedicated to these animals and you're like, I think they might be some digital animals that are monsters, and I think we might be
digital animals. Digiani are the champions.
But yeah, while this sort of stuff is unfolding, and it's like, it's similar to a Fire Emblem, where yeah, you're talking to everyone, making sure everyone likes you, but you're not running around in 3D. It's like more just like, you know, menu of like this location, and then it'll come up with the 2D thing, and you know, the people you can talk to. And then every now and then you'll have a tactical strategy battle. Much the same style as a Fire Emblem or an XCOM or whatever. And that's where you play as like the Digimons and you're using your little effects. Your little abilities and, you know, it's just very, very classic tactical battle stuff. But the whole package is just really fun. It's a good visual novel. I'm finding it really interesting, even though the, you know, tropes were exactly the same as the ones in Xenoblade Chronicles 3. It's all those kinds of characters. But I don't know, I like it. I don't know that I've committed to playing a proper visual novel before. Like, that's usually been like a deconstructed version of it or, you know, it's been like a Telltale game where there's been more gameplay. But I'm enjoying it. I think it's really well done. The writing is good. The voice acting is good. And popping up every now and then with a tactical strategy battle is, I don't know, it's a really good format. I don't know anything about, you know, if there's other games in the series or anything, but this one's fucking good.
I think this is the first of this sort of visual novel type they've done. They've done a lot of RPGs and stuff like that, but this seems to be the first, because a lot of people, I think, were taken by surprise that it was this too.
Just
like straight up a visual novel. Because it's a fun, when you get into the story that one of these is telling, like with, what was the name of those fucking NES remakes that came out maybe last year?
Oh, yeah, the Famicom Detective Club.
Yes.
It can be such a calm and enjoyable way of sitting there with a game. So that's good to hear that this is working. I'm interested in this as well.
Yeah, it is. And it is like, you know, a lot of, yeah, the better versions of this. There's a mystery, you know, there are stakes attached to every choice. It's getting more, you know, like tense and scary as it goes on, which is, yeah, it's obviously a great format. I mean, sure, just a nice little story where you go on camp with your friends might be, I mean, there's, I'm sure, a million visual novels that are that, but having that element of like, what the fuck is going on and who's this bad guy? Yeah, it's really well paced. It has a lot of those things that you were saying about Xenoblade where it's doing a tutorial that's forcing you to do the shit as it is explaining it to you, which it's a visual novel. There's not a lot of complexity here, but, you know, I guess...
The letter A can be used as an A on R sound.
On your controller, it is one of the buttons. A button can be used to... Yeah, it's... And, you know, I assume this is, like, largely... positioned towards kids or to be a kid-friendly game. So that's, you know, that's fair enough. But yeah, I'm enjoying it. There's one review, I don't know how popular it is, but there's one review from our patrons, from Thomas, who says, who slightly disagrees with me. He says it's 70% visual novel, 30% tactical RPG, and 100% not for kids anymore.
Oh.
I think it's still mainly for kids, but it's not, maybe not for kids in the way that Persona 5 is, like, a little more complicated than, you know, just a Digimon cartoon.
I remember even that Digimon cartoon back when we were kids. Like, I would have been 10 or something when that was at its peak, and watching 12. That and there being, like, you know, some guy who just strangled someone to death and looking at his hands being like, these hands just murdered someone. And my grandma being like, what are you watching?
Well, it's a monster.
This
and it comes out of
kid-friendly like Jimmy Savile, is it?
Oh, he was kid-friendly.
Was very.
But yes, so Thomas goes on, the story is an interesting mystery and the tactics RPG are in the vein of Fire Emblem or Final Fantasy Tactics. Thomas is enjoying this strange mix as the Digimon franchise feels like it's growing with its audience and pushing the boundaries of the series. Thomas reckons it can be a bit slow-paced at times, so he gives it 8 out of 10, which, I mean, yeah, it's tracking for a pretty high score with me as well. I don't think I have any overriding flaws with the game at all. It's a really nice presentation, and, you know, for a visual novel, that's obviously key, but... I was really drawn in. I was not sure what I was expecting when I cranked it up, but it really impressed me straight off the bat with how good it looks and how intriguing the story is. So it's a recommend from me.
Sounds cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Maybe we like video games,
huh? Yeah, I got some fucking video games out there doing some good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, let's wrap it up there for another week. We got next week. There's tomorrow the new some new Mario Kart tracks come out, including the gang heading down under. We got a Sydney track in there,
yeah,
which is pretty exciting.
Oh, yeah. Yep,
and a brand new track as well, which I don't think anyone expected them to bother doing. I felt like they'd been pretty clear about the fact that these would all be kind of, you know, remasters of other tracks. So it's cool that they're making a new one.
Yeah, because first pack, we thought, or one of us thought, there was a brand new one, but it was from Mario Kart Tour or something. So cool.
So yeah, that'll be fun. And there's also a mobile Bomberman kind of music rhythm game thing coming out on Apple Arcade tomorrow that looks cool.
Yeah.
Looks really cool.
Yeah, I reckon.
So I'm excited to play that.
We'll all be playing both of those, if possible.
Yeah.
So get around those. I feel like there was something else that was coming out tomorrow, but hey, we'll talk about it next week.
Absolutely we will. Guys, thanks for listening. Head to filthycasuals.com.au for the links to all the other stuff we have going on. Get on the Patreon, patreon.com/filthycasualspod. You can get all of the stuff that we did for Giant July.
Oh,
and thank you to everyone who hopped on board for that month. There's a bonus commentary for the Warcraft movie. There's a premium episode about the history of flops and failures in video games. There's two video things that we did. We played games live and we did a Q&A there, archived on there. You can also head on to our Bandcamp and get that Flops and Failures if you don't want to get on the Patreon for a dollar or more. A lot of people enjoying that so far. And also get on the YouTube. We're currently playing through The Quarry.
Yeah.
And having a lot of fun doing it. Fun, and there's new episodes of that going up every week.
I guess we should say links to all of this stuff is in the podcast descriptions every week too. We never really point that out. But it's all down there.
Yep.
Yeah, you can just scroll down a little bit and it's right there.
Yeah, open up Gremlin Cast or whatever it is that you that you use to listen to this.
Yeah, sorry the volume is slightly too low over on Splackle, but the description should be there.
Yeah.
Guys, thanks very much for listening. We'll see you next time, as we say here at the end of every episode of Filthy Casuals.
This is A World of Dew by Kobayashi Issa. A world of dew, and within every dew drop, a world of struggle.
Very nice.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.